Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and here's a version of the national anthem that many of you probably haven't heard.
Oh, say, can you see?
This is Isai Barnwell's version of the Star-Spangled Banner. Barnwell is a former member of Sweet Honey and the Rock and is now a master teacher and choral clinician. After actor Harry Belafonte asked her to do a black version of the national anthem, she came up with this energetic interpretation, including this politically charged lyric. Land of the free and the home of the slave. And Isai Barnwell joins us now from NPR in Washington, D.C. And welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you, Isai Barnwell. Great pleasure.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Yes.
Good to be with you.
So tell us about this interpretation. Tell me the story about sort of how it began, where it came from.
Well, it did begin with Harry Belafonte asking me, I guess in January or February of 2016, if I thought I could do a black version of the Star-Spangled Banner. And at that time, he was thinking about some kind of voter registration project that really might involve getting people to register to vote. And he said, you know, if you can do it, perhaps maybe we could get the Morehouse Glee Club to sing it. And so I thought about it, and that night I started laying down tracks, and the Morehouse Glee Club part was really, really beneficial for me because I have a low voice anyway, and so I didn't have to stretch for those notes that everybody stretches for.
It is a hard one to sing for a lot of people, isn't it?
It is. It can be very challenging.
Yeah.
But I got totally involved in it, and the elements for me that made it black had to do with the rhythm that was underneath it. If you just listen to it, it sounds almost like a marching rhythm. But if you listen closely, there's another kind of syncopation underneath it. And that rhythm actually comes out of Gullah culture in South Carolina. My father came from South Carolina. My mother came from Los Angeles. And
it
so I sort
great.
Of have this in my blood. And this felt, you know, when I started working on it, it perfectly fit. And I just went with it.
Isai, let's just listen for
sure.
just for a few more seconds because you've done such nice descriptions here. I just want to hear it. All right, we came right up on that line again, home of the brave and home of the slave. That was unintentional, but I did want to ask you about that. What's the significance of that line to you? Because that's got some political charge to it.
Yes, it does. It does. It really has to do with what was going on at the time that this was written. Mm. And the fact that we have, as African Americans, fought in every war that has taken place in this country. And that we were not acknowledged in this song, which became our national anthem. So my interest in adding the word slave, which I'm certainly happy that it rhymed,
right.
was to kind of not only take ownership because of the rhythm that I had laid underneath it, but to bring an awareness to the fact that as folk who were enslaved, we actually fought in all of the wars that have happened in this country.
Yeah. Now, Isai, I noticed, too, at the end, so the line reverts to home of the free and land of the brave, right?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
So, that is correct.
So there's, it almost suggests a kind of evolution, I guess, and an acknowledgement that, that we did move from slavery to freedom, but still, let's not forget that important history.
Yes, and there's another thought, and I really am still checking on this to find out When we use the term brave with reference to Native Americans, is that a derogatory term or is that an acceptable term? Because both both definitions work for me in that place. And so we don't think of the brave as being here when we were fighting that war. And the fact that they, too, are fighting in all of the wars that we have in this country and with other countries. But I wanted to acknowledge them, and leaving the word brave there gave me the territory to be able to use one or the other meaning.
And really interesting. There have been other sort of alternative renditions of the Star Spangled Banner over the years. Whitney Houston did a version at the Super Bowl. There was a controversial version performed by Jose Feliciano at the 1968 World Series. And then, of course, there's this, I think, great version by Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. Let's just listen to this for a little bit. So, without dating myself too much, I remember when that came out, and it was hugely exciting for me as a kid to listen to that.
Yes.
What I didn't anticipate was the number of people that, you know, really reacted negatively to it, like he was really giving the finger to this country.
Yes. There is something about taking ownership.
Yeah.
And when you take ownership and you are not the majority, it feels strange.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what has happened in the case of Jose Feliciano. I remember an uproar around that, as well as around Jimi Hendrix. And there may be one around this version as well.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Have you heard back from folks? Have people reached out to either compliment you or to take issue with some of the, as we mentioned, some of the political charge in your version?
So far, only the people who love it have written or called or spoken back. So I haven't gotten negative criticism from it. I anticipate that there are folk who would not feel that this was the anthem that they're familiar with.
Sure. Now, you mentioned, you made reference to this, in many ways, the national anthem, difficult song to sing in many ways. What was, you talked a little bit about sort of how you went about making it your own, but what was the biggest challenge with that? What was the difficult part of that?
Actually, there wasn't anything difficult about it. Once the rhythm came, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I've sung all of the voices. It's all ad lib. I did one major take of the whole thing, and it all fell together. But of course, I have a background in singing that does that anyway. It's what the women of Sweet Honey in the Rock do. You know, when I joined the group, I had to sing things I'd never heard before. That happened the first time I sang with the group at Battery Park in New York, where thousands of people were there around No Nukes, etc. And so it's something that I really am challenged by and enjoy doing, which is creating all of the other lines that are possible. That's what composers do. That's what arrangers do.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm both. So it was the most exciting challenge that I'd had in a while, and I really was grateful for it.
Well, Isai Barnwell, you brought up Sweet Honey in the Rock, and I'm glad you did, because I wanted to ask you about your experience in that group. In fact, we've got something to play. This is Sweet Honey in the Rock's On Children from your 1988 album, Breathes, right? Here it is.
Breaths, yes.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you.
Sweet Honey in the Rock there from the album On Children, from the song On Children from their album Breaths, and Isai Barnwell. That was such a great group. I was really happy to be reminded of them and to hear that sound. Can you tell me something about what it was like to perform together with them?
It was fabulous every time because things were not, you know, they were not in starch. They were really in fluid mode. And so we, you know, we could improvise. We could add things that we hadn't added before, soften things that we hadn't before, create a new line that no one had heard. It was a joy because we were always creating. We were not just reciting something that we had previously learned and reinterpreting in that way. But we could sing, you know, a line totally differently. And it was really the person who started the song who would set the tone of it, the pacing of it, the intention of it. And very often it was not what we might have expected because that person was not the same person as the one who had sung it the last time. It was the same individual, but it was not the same person because they were shaped by what was going on in the community that we were in or in the time that we were in. And so we were responsive, I think, on so many levels, not only to each other, but to the community, to the world, to what was going on in the news. And that made Sweet Honey, I think, a formidable group because we weren't stuck in a particular groove. We could change, we could move, we could reinterpret things musically, and because we could reinterpret them musically, we could also reinterpret them politically, emotionally, spiritually, in all different ways.
Wow. Well, it was such a great group, and I'm really happy to hear you talk about it that way. I want to come back to this question about the national anthem and the reinterpretation of it. The national anthem, of course, it's been involved recently in controversy with NFL players kneeling or staying in the locker room during its playing at football games to protest systematic racism and police brutality. Some say bringing politics into NFL games is misplaced. How are you thinking about this whole controversy that's playing out across the country right now?
You know, I think we as individuals have a responsibility to take a stand wherever we are. And if and when we decide, now is the time to take a stand. And so I really applaud Mr. Kaepernick because he has been doing that for a little over a year now and has begun to get his message out so that people understand what he is doing and why he is doing it. Now, the fact that he's misunderstood by some people is always a possibility. But I really respect him. I respect those players who are joining him. And even though I've never been to a ball game in my life, I really, really respect that where you are is where you have to take your stand. And so I feel like he has done that, and the players who are joining him now are doing the same thing.
Well, that's Isai Barnwell. She's a musician, master teacher, and choral clinician. She arranged the black version of the Star Spangled Banner. She's also a former member of Sweet Honey on the Rock, the great group that performed between 1979 and 2013. Isai Barnwell, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and Sweet Honey is still out there.
Glad to hear that. All right, we're gonna go out this break with Isai's arrangement of the national anthem. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.